Today on Maine Calling, veterans' voices and stories. Every Veterans Day, Maine Calling turns to you to share stories about your service or about those in your life who serve their country. We want to hear your anecdotes and memories. What lessons did you learn? What do these veterans mean to you? This year, our show coincides with the rollout of a special Maine Public podcast series. Military Voices of Maine, produced in partnership with StoryCorps, captures interviews with Maine veterans conducted by loved ones. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will hear from those whose stories are highlighted in the Military Voices of Maine project. But that's not all. We'll hear from others deeply involved in the veterans community to honor their service. Who are you thinking of today, this Veterans Day? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. And by Maine Sea Coast Mission, supporting Maine island communities through education, health, and community engagement. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Veterans Day is a time to reflect and honor those who died and all who served in the armed forces. Today, we will share stories of service. Joining me for the hour, David Richmond, who is director of the Maine Bureau of Veterans Service. Thank you so much, services. Thank you, David, for joining us today.
Thank you, Jennifer, for having me.
We invite you to join the conversation as well, and this is a day to share your stories. Did you serve or know someone who did? Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Something special during today's program, you're going to hear from people who participated in a limited series podcast called Military Voices of Maine. Last summer, Maine Public partnered with StoryCorps to capture the stories of Maine veterans. More than 150 interviews were recorded. Most of those veterans were interviewed by a loved one, and all of the stories are going to be archived at the Library of Congress. Maine Public chose 10 interviews to highlight. You can listen to them. The Military Voices of Maine podcast at mainepublic.org. That, if you do it that way, you go to the community tab, or you just can find them wherever you usually find your podcasts. Again, it's called Military Voices of Maine. Well, David, I wanted to ask you some of your stories, who you want to honor today. But first, I want to give you an opportunity to talk about the work of the Maine Bureau of Veterans Services, because I know that you do a lot of work there, but I sense that maybe there are people out there who don't know what you do and don't access those services that they could be accessing. So I know that I'm just asking you to do this briefly, but give us a sense of what the Maine Bureau of Veterans Services does.
Thank you. So the Maine Bureau of Veterans Services has multiple missions. So we're a state agency. So we're not the VA, but we have veteran service offices spread throughout the state of Maine, and veteran service officers. We have 12 across the whole state who represent veterans before the VA and help them file claims. They're accredited service officers. Another thing that our bureau does is we have the four state veteran cemeteries. So there's one in Springvale, one in Caribou, and there's two in Augusta. And those are a lot like a national cemetery, but they're owned and operated by the state with assistance from the VA. We've got several other state missions, and one of my favorites, very relevant for today, is recognizing the service and sacrifice of the veterans of the state. So we've got a recognition program that involves coins for periods of service. So we have women veterans coin, World War II veterans coin, Korea, Vietnam, and what we call the Forever coin for all other veterans. We have several other forms of recognition that we present to veterans and thank them for their service. And there's a whole bunch of other things that our bureau does for veterans and their families in our state. And I would encourage your listeners to go to our website at maine.gov/veterans or call our central office at 287-7020 and get a hold of us and find out what we can do for you.
And my understanding is if somebody has a question and it's not a service that you provide, you can actually steer them in the right direction as well. So they don't need to try to figure out the right place to go before they give you a call, right?
That's correct. In fact, all of our employees, we know the other stakeholders, the other people that are serving veterans, our colleagues at the VA or the Veterans Benefit Administration. We know who to call to put them in contact to check the status of a claim, whether we did the claim for them or not. We can help them enroll in healthcare through the VA, and we can connect them with several other agencies or service organizations. We've got a large team of stakeholders that are looking out for veterans in our state, and we know how to get a hold of them.
You yourself are a veteran. Tell us about your service.
So I went into the Army after I graduated from USM. I went through ROTC, and so we went through ROTC at UNH, and then I was commissioned as an armor officer, so as a tanker, for 4 years on active duty in the Army. And I was stationed out in Fort Riley, Kansas, and I was a tank platoon leader and a mortar platoon leader. And then when I came home after my 4 years of active, I went into the National Guard and was in the Guard until 2004. Most of my time was spent in the Mountain Infantry Company in Brewer. So I've had a lot of chances to do some really cool things in the Army and work with. Made a lot of friends on active duty as well as in the main Army National Guard.
Tell us who you are thinking about today on this Veterans Day.
So I always think of family first. So, you know, my father was a multiple combat tour, a combat cruise, a Navy veteran. He flew A-6s in Vietnam. And I think of him. And checking with him before my first event on Veterans Day. And I think of my stepdad, who was in the Army during Vietnam, but he served in Germany. And I think of my friends who I graduated high school with. I checked in with one of them today. I think of him and the people who are close to me come to mind first. And then, because of the great job that I have, I see veterans all day long, every day. So, but that's how I start off the day on Veterans Day.
Is there anything special going on at the cemeteries today?
There is not so much the cemetery. Well, there is one in Caribou, but there are things throughout the state. We issued a special newsletter on Friday with all the events that we know about. You can get the link on our website. And once again, that's maine.gov/veterans. But look at our November newsletter, and all of the Veterans Day events that we know about are published on that newsletter. And you'll definitely find something in your neck of the woods. I'm up in Bangor right now because I'm going to be attending the Cole Land Transportation Veterans Day ceremony at 1 o'clock.
Wonderful. Well, we mentioned at the beginning of the program the podcast Military Voices of Maine, and we're going to listen to an excerpt from it. This is episode 5 called Honor and Art. It is the story of Master Sergeant Angela Blevins, a veteran of Desert Storm and a member of the Maine Honor Guard. She served 27 years in the Navy. Here, she's talking about her time in the Honor Guard in Maine.
So after Desert Storm, I joined the Honor Guard because they remember the fallen, and some people forget that. I think it reflected back on me being the youngest in my family and going to funerals all my life, that now I have, at that time I served in the Honor Guard, we went to cemeteries and we did funerals and we did the 21-gun salute, and everything was dressed right dress. It wasn't sloppy. It was nice and neat and organized, just like the service is supposed to be.
So can we move to another aspect of your service, which was when you worked on creating portraits for fallen heroes. And was this something you thought of doing? Did you undertake this as something?
So guards across the United States were being activated to go overseas for Afghanistan. I would go to other states and see what their memorials were like as you're leaving. And a lot of people had photographs, and the photographs were turning yellow even for a short period of time. And So I introduced that they should have portraits drawn by somebody, me.
That was Angela Blevins from episode 5 of our limited series podcast, Military Voices of Maine. David.
I want to say that I know Angie. I've known her for during my time in the National Guard and then after. And if you ever want to visit her beautiful portraits, they're all on display at Camp Chamberlain in the front drill hall. Bring your ID to get through the checkpoint, but you can go in and see what she's done, and they're beautiful tributes to the
Where is
guards.
Camp Chamberlain?
In Augusta, Maine.
Okay, that's wonderful to know. What was I going to say, David? She talked about the Honor Guard, and my understanding is that so many World War II, we're losing so many to World War II veterans in the last decade or so that it's been very hard for the military to get an Honor Guard to every funeral. Is that right? I mean, and what are you doing today?
It is very difficult. Angie was a member of the Maine State Honor Guard, and they still do a phenomenal job, and they'll do everything they can to get there with two members to fold the flag and play taps. If they can't, they'll work with stakeholder groups, local honor guards from service organizations to make sure that veteran is represented. But the other service branches also have a mission to contribute. So the Navy will come, the Marine Corps will send representatives, whichever branch that service member was in, they'll get a representative from that service branch.
And you mentioned that the Maine Bureau of Veterans Services will find a way to honor those who are still alive. If somebody's listening right now and thinks, wow, I'd really love to honor my father or grandfather or aunt, what is there a criteria, and what do they do to make that happen?
So once again, go to the website, and there's a web form that you can fill out, and basically just put the basic information for their service member that they want to honor. And there's a place to attach the discharge document, DD-214, and send it off to us. And we can do a recognition certificate from the state and send a coin corresponding the service that they completed. And we also have the state Silver Star medal for any veteran who was awarded or received the Purple Heart or was a prisoner of war. And we have a Gold Star medal for veterans who were killed in action. We'll present that to their families.
All right. I have an email here from Jean. Could you let veterans know that should they need mental health care, the Give an Hour program is available to them free of charge? Therapists give an hour a week for at least a year. This is the commitment they need to make to be in the program. And the toll-free number is 888-244-6843. I'll say it one more time, but I know that we'll also post this on our Facebook page, 888-244-6843, and that's the Give an Hour program. David, just one of the many wonderful programs that maybe are not directly affiliated with the Veterans Administration or a military organization, but the ways in which other organizations support veterans in Maine.
That's a great example. And we're affiliated with all kinds of partners who are working for to that end. In our Maine Veterans and Benefits and Resource Guide, available on PDF on our website, it's full of all of the, for instance, all of the locations of the vet centers that veterans who are combat veterans or who were exposed to military sexual trauma can get services at a vet center near them. We also work with Health Affiliates of Maine. So They're an agency that can provide free counseling for up to six visits for veterans, and the VA is our go-to. So we would we're able to help connect veterans to VA healthcare, where they can get counseling at the VA or one of the CBOCs spread throughout the state.
David, do you find that it's often hard for people to make that first call or walk into one of these places for the first time?
Yeah, I do find that. I find it every day, in fact, or at least every week. We'll hear from the family of a veteran who, you know, a lot of veterans, they just come back to the state after their service and they don't need anything and they don't want anything. They just go back to work or whatever they're, whatever they wanted to do in civilian life, they do it. And we may not hear from them until their 80s or 90s when they're thinking about, I'd like to see if I could get into the Maine Veterans Home, or maybe get my health care through TOGAS, or maybe I can get care at home through the VA. We are there to help for sure, but these things take time. So it's better to deal with it now and just contact us, and we can help you sign up for health care through the VA or file a claim with the VA, so that when the time comes and you really need these services, you have them. It's much easier.
Well, we are speaking with David Richmond, who is the director of the Maine Bureau of Veteran Services. We want to hear from you. We want to hear your stories of tribute to veterans in your life, and also maybe something that you carry with you that you remember either from your time in service or from someone who you care about who's taught you something. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're hearing stories and memories of service from veterans and their family, veterans and their friends and family members. With me, David Richmond, who is director of the Maine Bureau of Veteran Services. Share your comments and questions. Please share your stories with us. Send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is John McCarthy. He was interviewed by his wife, Lee, for the Military Voices of Maine project. He is a Vietnam War veteran. John, thanks so much for giving us a call.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Tell us how you found out about this project and how you decided to participate.
Well, I wish I could remember that. I did become aware of it, and my wife and I talked about it, and we said it was on. This was done for us on Memorial Day at Fort Williams, and so we just decided we'd like to participate. We thought we had a little story to tell, and that's how we got involved.
Okay, well, we're not going to play your story, but can you give us a little synopsis of what people hear if they listen to it?
Yes. First of all, there's the shortened version on Maine Public, and then there's the StoryCorps three times as long version. And I only say that because I'm a little bit uncomfortable with the story on Maine Public, which is our story and is the reason we went there. But I don't want to forget the people that I served with who died and were injured. In particular, I came to know the family of one of my men who died there. And if I can say one side story, when I talked to them, this was years after I came home, they were very tormented by not really knowing exactly what happened. And the sister said to me, our mother has died, but she didn't die until 10 years after Michael died, but she died from a broken heart. Mm. And it was just so clear what Gold Star families go through. But the other story is Lee and I met when I was in the Army at Fort Knox. And we got married, and almost immediately after we got married, I went to Vietnam, where I was an infantry platoon leader. And in many ways, I had a very positive experience. It changed my life. And while I have regular infantry experiences, and again, I don't want to diminish those for the men who served with me, because they were uniformly courageous. But for me, what happened is I got out, I went back to college, on the GI Bill. I went to graduate school on the GI Bill. I bought a house on the GI Bill. The Veterans Administration has done a great many things for me. I'm in touch with lots of people that I knew in the military, although a lot of that contact didn't start for 20, 30, 40 years after we came home. But it's a big part of my life, and it was a very, very positive experience for us. And as the interview will reveal, it was a joint experience for Lee and I. Mm. We had many different occurrences.
Yeah, and John, I want to ask you about this idea of having your story recorded and now at the Library of Congress archived, you know, for researchers in the near and far future. What does that mean to you?
Well, it just seemed like it was an easy enough thing for us to do, and we felt like our experience was reflective of one of the kinds of things that happened to people during the Vietnam War. And it's also about how knowledge that you're going to war and that you're at war when you're just married and just starting out is a whole story and experience in itself.
Well, John, thank you so much for calling in today. David, before we say goodbye, is there anything you'd like to say to John?
I just want to say thanks to John for both his service in Vietnam, but also for taking part in Military Voices. It's, you know, this is something that's going to stay there, and his family will be able to search it and learn from his experiences in the future. And that is it's an incredible gift. So, you know, thank you, John.
Well, thank you. And I should say, I never know how to pronounce it, but the Veterans Services Bureau has been very useful to us, very helpful. I've referred a number of people to it who have received help also. You do a wonderful job.
Thank you.
Thank you. We just heard from John McCarthy, a Vietnam veteran, and his story part of the Maine Public Limited Series podcast, Military Voices of Maine, also at the Library of Congress. You can listen to it at mainepublic.org or wherever you get your podcast. Let's see, we're going to go to Ruth, who's calling from Keyser Falls. Hi, Ruth. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Yes, my name is Ruth. I live in Keyser Falls, and my dad served in World War II. My brother Richard was my dad fought in World War II, and while he was fighting overseas, he's in the Army Air Corps, what he was. So he was in the back of the plane, apparently, and twice he was shot down over enemy territory, but he parachuted out, and they rescued him, thank goodness. I don't know about the other crew on the plane. I think I was told some of them did not survive. They did not make it. But because my dad was in the back of the plane, he was able to parachute out and to be rescued and to get back home after the war was over in 45. And while he was serving, my mom gave birth to my brother Richard, who was born in March of 1943. My dad never saw my brother Richard until he was like 18 months old, something like that. So he was a toddler at that point. And there's a picture of my brother Richard as a little tyke in an Army uniform, just like my dad wore when he was in the service. So had he not been rescued, Faye, my older sister, myself, and Marie would not be here, because he would not have come home, obviously. So I'm just very grateful that after being shot down, they were able to rescue him and bring him home. And he was pretty special to me because my brother was not a sports fan, but I love sports. I'm a Yankees fan. I was raised a Yankees fan. And my dad and I used to listen to the Yankees, the Mets. He taught me all about football, baseball, basketball. He taught me all about sports. He taught me how to catch in softball, how to hit a ball, how to slide, how to tag the runner out. He spent hours up in the backfield just teaching me all about sports. So I have really wonderful memories about my dad, let's put it that way. So I'm just...
Well, Ruth, thank you. Thank you so much for calling in on this Veterans Day and telling us about your father. Ruth calling from Keyser Falls. We're going to go now to Dr. Michael Rickey, who is a retired surgeon from Central Maine Medical Center, also a retired colonel and U.S. Air Force flight surgeon. Dr. Rickey, thanks for calling in.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Share with us what you've decided to do to honor your fellow servicemen and women at Central Maine Medical Center.
Well, when I got here, I noticed that there were just a lot of veterans, or at least a lot that wore baseball caps, noting that they were on, that they served. And I started taking their photograph of our patients in HVI and put them up on a wall. There was a, outside my office, a very long wall, which was just white. And so we started just taking pictures and putting them up on the wall, and it kind of grew. And all the staff, the other surgeons contributed and took photos, and now there's a few hundred of them up there. It's really kind of special.
Wow, a few hundred veterans' portraits at Central Maine Medical Center. That really sounds powerful. I think there's a picture of you with those that we're going to put on our Facebook page so people can get a sense of what this looks like. But tell us about your own service. What was it like being a flight surgeon?
Well, I came late to the military. I was 47 when I joined, and then I served for 20 years. And a flight surgeon is an aerospace medicine doctor, an occupational doctor. But I also served as a vascular surgeon, which is or was my day job. We did humanitarian missions, mostly to Senegal. I was twice in Iraq and once in Afghanistan, where we did tours in the Air Force hospital there. Or I was the first time I was a flight surgeon and kind of volunteered in the hospital. Flight surgeon means I kind of flew around in Iraq and supported our our F-16s.
Wow. So what's interesting, you said you joined a little bit later. You were 47. I think that's pretty unusual. Why did you decide to join then?
Well, I think it's probably not as unusual as you think, but I think that probably my dad had an influence on me. He was gone by then, but he was a World War II vet who was seriously injured in World War II and had two Purple Hearts. And I think after 9/11, that kind of lingered. And I think those are probably the influences that caused me to join at that point. At that time, I was at in Vermont, at the University of Vermont. And so it was the Vermont Air National Guard that I joined. And they flew F-16s, which isn't too shabby. So that wasn't additional benefit.
I understand you had quite a flight once.
Well, yes, probably one of the bennies. Anytime flying in the F-16 was special. But yeah, in 2011, I got to do the flyby over Fenway Park on opening day.
That sounds really fun. Well, Dr. Rickey, thank you so much for calling in today on Veterans Day. Thank you for your service. Dr. Michael Rickey, a flight surgeon who served overseas and then created the Veterans Wall at Central Maine Medical Center. So thank you for calling in. We're going to go now to Jim Siragusa, who is also a participant in the Military of Voices of Maine project. Thanks for calling in, Jim.
Ah, thanks for having me, Jennifer. I love the show. So I got involved with the Military Voices of Maine through Joy Ascension, who's sort of made it her life's work to honor veterans in Maine. She's the state ambassador at the Military Women's Memorial in D.C. And so my mom was a World War II veteran. She was a Navy nurse, and she was in the Navy for 8 years. And, well, actually, she was active, and then she was an active reservist for 4 years after that. She lived to be over 100. She died last November.
Oh.
And, that's 8% of her life. Active duty, but it was a huge percent of her memory and really her identity. And I was fortunate enough to meet a few of her patients, and I'm old enough to have met a few of her patients because she went in 45. January of 1945. And one of them, actually, I didn't meet her. He called the house, and I picked up. And he was actually the first patient she met. She worked on a paraplegic and quadriplegic ward at St. Albans Naval Hospital on Long Island. And so the first person she met in first patient was a quadriplegic. He broke his neck in a Navy football game. He was only 18 years old. And so she nicknamed him Sweetie. And after that, everybody at St. Albans called him Sweetie. And so when I was like 11 years old, he called the house and I picked up and he said, "Hi, this is Henry Volpe. Is your mother home?" And I said, "Are you Sweetie Volpe?" And he cried. Oh. And, you know, at age 11, I didn't really understand why. But I figured it out eventually. She meant so much to him in his life that he was just overcome with the knowledge that he meant so much to her, that her children, whom he had never met, knew who he was and his nickname. And that's just, you know, we knew all of the names of her patients. She had these in her head. She didn't write any of this down. So she had this in her head for like 70 years. I did have the good fortune to meet one of her patients in Sarasota. His name was Pete Yoakum. Pete was injured in Guadalcanal, had a mortar entry between his shoulders. But he could move his arms. He was a paraplegic. And he was an amazing person. He traveled the world representing the U.S., in the Paralympic Games, starting with the first games in the late 40s. And so we went and visited Pete, my brother and I, and I have seven siblings, but I feel like she chose us to go with her because we were preteens, and I think she wanted to show us an example of, you know, how to be an amazing man. So we talked all afternoon, and then we went out to dinner, so we had a moment alone with Pete. He actually drove with hand controls. And he said, so my mom was following us in her car. And he said, "You know, boys, back at St. Albans, we all considered your mother to be an angel." And so being kids, we snickered. And he said, "Oh, no, I'm dead serious. When you, a bunch of guys like us who wake up in the morning remembering that we're never going to walk again or in some cases move again, you start every day praying for hope. And we believe that your mom was the answer to our prayers."
Oh,
that
wow.
God sent her, yeah. That God just sent her to us to give us hope. And she did. And that, you know, that her career was really one of the most important things in her life. And I mean, she had eight kids. She was married. Our father was a Korean War veteran. He was a flight surgeon, like your previous caller. And, but yeah, she would tell us stories all her life about the baby. And yeah.
Jim, thank you so much. Thank you so much for calling and sharing all of this about your mother. And it just really a wonderful story for today. Jim Siragusa from Stowe, Maine, interviewed his late mother for the Maine Public Podcast, Military Voices of Maine. We're going to another one. This is Justin Spencer, who participated in the podcast. Justin, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, Jennifer, how are you doing?
Good. Tell us about participating in the StoryCorps project and now the podcast.
Yeah, so I had heard about it when I was working for the Maine Department of Labor as a local veteran employment representative, and our program manager had mentioned it, and I thought it was a great opportunity for me and my wife to just talk and tell part of our story.
Yeah, and so now that it's there, now that it's been archived at the Library of Congress, part of a podcast, what do you find it means to you?
I thought it was really great how they are archiving veteran stories and sharing them with family members, friends, and just having it where it's so accessible, just where people can hear these stories that they may never have heard, to just go to that location and hear them. I've gone through and I've listened to a handful of the ones that have been done, and I'm really enjoying myself.
So let me ask you, I don't want you to give away the whole thing, but give us a little preview or synopsis of your story.
So for myself, I was a combat engineer with two deployments, and my story was about the support that I was given by my beautiful wife, Emily. With two deployments as a combat engineer, it was a lot of stress, and to have her as my support and to come back to that, the transition was a lot easier, and she was my rock. So that was what we talked about, was the support aspect that military get from family members and friends and people in the background.
Well, thank you so much for calling into today's program on Veterans Day. Justin Spencer is a veteran. He and his wife took part in the Maine Public Podcast, Military Voices of Maine. We'd love to hear from you. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you are listening to Maine Calling. Today on Veterans Day, we are hearing stories about veterans who have served and also reminiscences from loved ones. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or find us on social media. If you do so quickly, though. I have an email here from Myron, and this will be a good question for you, David. I have a close friend who served in the U.S. Army after the first Gulf War. Because he didn't serve during a war, he feels he's not deserving of benefits that he is eligible to receive. Could your guest please speak to this? And if you're just joining us, our guest is David Richmond from the Maine Bureau of Veteran Services. So David, I suspect that this friend of Myron's is not alone. What would you say to him?
I would encourage him to come talk to our veteran service officer. Where I'm not sure where they live, but if they go to our website, you know, maine.gov/veterans, they can find a local office near them and just come have a discussion, because I think Myron's husband will leave knowing that it's hard to go through 3 or 4 years in active service and not have something happen to you. And there's a lot of benefit that can be achieved from getting access to VA healthcare. And just because they were never deployed doesn't make that a hard thing to do. And there's plenty of avenues to get healthcare through the VA and plenty of benefits available for all veterans, not just those that were deployed.
I'm sensing there are kind of two layers to this question, too, about deserving something. Like somebody might think, oh, I don't qualify because I wasn't deployed. But somebody else might be thinking, well, I don't deserve the same things that that person who actually put their life on the line day after day does.
A lot of people feel that way, but it's true also that the amount of resources that our state gets to help veterans is based on the number of veterans that come forward and ask for health care through the VA or ask for care at the vet center or and get access to their benefits. So it really, they earned them. They don't have to have been deployed to get their benefits that they've earned.
We'll go to Tom, who's calling from Freeport. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Hi. I couldn't help listening to some of the other callers, but one thing that happened recently to me was I was invited to go on the honor flight in September, and it was the welcome that we didn't get when we returned from Vietnam, and there were many amazing stories on the trip that we swapped, and then I think the most memorable were the two tunnel rats who were on the trip, and one was a Marine and the other was Army, and they their job was to take a flashlight and a 45 pistol and go down into these tunnels and search them out, and the one man had three Purple Hearts, so you get an idea of how dangerous it was. But the other was someone spoke of rescuing her father in World War II, and it did not stop there. The tradition of leave no man behind. When I flew a lot of nights, I liked that, and the expense, the machinery, the people that were committed to those extracts at night, either an emergency medevac or a reconnaissance team, which might have been 10 guys and a dog who got into trouble needed to be extracted. So there would be a package that would be just called upon, put together, it would consist of the bottom layer would be two helicopter gunships. In our case, Marine Corps, it was Hueys. And then above us at maybe 3,000 feet would be two H-46 transports to do the extract. And then above that would be a reconnaissance aircraft, an OV-10, that was kind of directing the show, so to speak. And above that would be an Air Force C-130 that would be flying back and forth, dropping flares and keeping probably a couple of square miles lighted. And then above that would be F-4s, A-4s, obviously to normally to drop bombs. And that was a sort of effort, showed the value that they put on human life. And I thought that was one of the maybe that's a conundrum of the war, was that the NVA, which is all I ever dealt with, valued shooting down aircraft or doing harm to equipment, and I'm afraid it was people, whereas we valued people, and apparently that's a better way to put it. We valued people, and they valued machinery, I encountered a person about 5 years ago at the Freiburg Fair, and she said, you must have encountered a lot of atrocities over there. And I said, I thought a bit and then came back and I said, you know, I never saw or encountered any atrocities because the people I worked with had discipline and values and knew the rules and adhered to them. And the mission that I was most involved with in 2020 hindsight was taking care of Marines and getting them out.
Tom, thank you so much for sharing your story and your perspective, an important story and perspective. When we think about Vietnam and a lot of people's assumptions about the service there, thank you so much for calling in. I'm going to move on to Travis, who's calling from Yarmouth. Hi, Travis. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to make a quick mention of an organization that I'm a member of, which is the Society of American Military Engineers. They're a big national organization that includes people and contractors that do work for the military. And it's kind of a misnomer because you don't need to be an engineer to join the organization. But they're a national organization, and they have posts all over the country and also internationally And the reason I wanted to mention them is because one of their big focuses is on transitioning military and particularly enlisted folks. And one of the big events that they have every year is actually a veterans transition workshop where they help people transition from the military to private companies, particularly engineering companies. And, they really value military folks coming into the private industry.
Oh, Travis. Yeah. Thanks for calling to let us know about that. The Society of American Military Engineers. Thank you. And thank you for being involved in that. We're going to go to an email here from Colleen. My father, Thomas Holigan Jr., a World War II Navy veteran, was fortunate to go to Washington, D.C. on an honor flight out of Connecticut. He was in his 90s and had such a wonderful time. I encourage everyone who has an elderly veteran in their family to look into this wonderful opportunity. And of course, David, we just heard from someone who participated in the honor flight just a couple minutes ago. David, have you had an opportunity to go on one of those?
I haven't, but I know that Joy Ascension's name came up earlier in one of the calls, and she's part of that organization. We deal with other folks on Honor Flight, Dave Patch. The work they do to get veterans down to see the memorials is it's fantastic, and I'm so glad that they're out there doing it. Honor Flight is a really important part, and we heard from a Vietnam veteran a minute ago, who clearly that trip was healing for him, and I know that a lot of veterans find that to be the case, and it's a great organization.
Yeah, one of the reasons I'm glad he called, several reasons, but one of them is that I think that a lot of people associate the Honor Flight with World War II veterans, but clearly that's not the case. It's not only for World War II veterans.
It's not, no. They'll do Korean War trips, and they've done Vietnam trips also.
Yeah, so that's a wonderful resource for anybody who's looking for a way to honor somebody in their lives. And David, is it focused? Do you know enough about it to know, is it focused on people who may have difficulty getting there on their own, or is it available to everybody?
Any veteran can sign up for one of the flights. And if they have special needs, they'll get somebody to go along on with them. To help them around in the memorial areas. There are plenty of people there on the flight that can help. So they've got it figured out.
All right. I have an email here from Vinny pointing out an event coming up at Scontris Center at USM called Wounds of War, How the VA Delivers Health, Healing, and Hope to the Nation's Veterans. So another event that's coming up that's sort of outside the traditional orbit of the Bureau of Veteran Services and the VA.
You know, we had a chance during September to do a resilience event at USM, and we had a speaker come, Tom Voss, who was a veteran, talking about resilience and finding his way back after his deployment. And it was just a wonderful day to hear from Tom, but not just Tom, but also the panels that we had of veterans who had deployed and come back, and they sat on the panel with their spouses, and they talked about their experience in reintegrating back into civilian life after being away, for instance, in the Maine Army National Guard and being deployed and coming back, and some of the challenges they faced and how they overcame them.
We have less than a minute left, but I wanted to ask you, David, As all of us go through Veterans Day today, and for many people, it's a day off work, what would you like people to stop and think about, or even just do? What would be something everybody can do today to honor veteran service?
I think recognize the veterans around you. I'm getting ready to go talk over at the Cole Museum about service after service, because if you look around in your communities, you're going to find that veterans don't own the market shares of service, but they're a lot. They own a lot of the shares. You know, they're going to be your soccer coaches, your scout leaders, your company presidents are giving back to their communities. They're all around you, and make sure that you say thank you for what they're doing and what they've done.
Well, thank you not just for your service, but also for taking an hour to be with us today. This is David Richmond, who joined us for the hour, the director of the Maine Bureau of Veterans Services. Today's sound engineer was Jess Miller. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. And a special thanks to Allison New for her help with today's program and with the Maine Military Voices podcast. Again, you can find that wherever you get your podcasts or at mainepublic.org and under the tab Community. A reminder, Maine Calling invites you to share your thoughts with us anytime on the Maine Public Vox Pop app. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.